I can tell you can. You have some acting genes.
No chance.
You don't think so?
No, I'm the worst actor ever. Bro.
Really?
I'm horrible. I can't even fucking read these commercials that we do, bro. I'm terrible at acting.
Well, maybe we can.
If I can just come in and do like this and like be myself, I'm fine. But like, if I have to like.
But you did good when we did that skit where you dressed up as Kylo Ren. I thought you were a natural.
Yeah,
man.
Well, I mean, that's just easy, though. You know what I'm saying? But like, because that's me, though. I'm myself. Yeah, yeah. But like, I did these Toyota commercials, me and Amber, back in the day, and they are the worst fucking commercial that you've ever seen in your life. Like, me reading off a little board, like, it was terrible.
Maybe we could make up for the lack of an Entourage cameo with power and just kind of write that. I feel like.
Do it.
I would.
If you suck, your scene might get cut.
I always get jealous when I see like athletes in shows. Like when I saw Melo and Sons of Anarchy, I was like, "What the fuck? Like, why can I be in these shows, man? Like, these are my shows too." Yo, what up? We're back. R2C2.
That's right. And by the way, I saw Amber was rocking the R2C2 mug the other
day. Yeah, she loves it, bro. She loves it.
You know, I DM'd her. I didn't know if that was inappropriate to DM your wife, but I just...
No, you're good.
Just had to tell her, dang, I'm glad you're rocking the mug.
You're good.
We got a great pod today, man.
We do. I'm excited for this.
Jerry Ferrara, who stars on...
A couple of my favorite shows.
Yeah, man. Power, Entourage, and is a huge sports fan, big Nick fan. Thanks for being with us, Jerry.
I just want to say, it is a great title for a podcast. And I got to get one of these mugs we're talking about.
You know what? I have.
This dude was hot.
I drink a lot. I came with a coffee.
Oh, man.
He had the mugs like 6 months ago, and then I finally got mine.
I love
like,
a good
like,
mug.
You know what? You know what's funny? I got to get a new shipment, and I had one left over. And I was like, I should bring it and give it to Jerry.
You didn't actually think
that should
it
be
and
the guest.
Didn't do
that
it.
Should be a guest thing right there. We should give one to the guest. Yes.
I like it. So. Yeah. You know what it means? We're just going to all have to go to a Nick game together.
There we go.
We can
and
do
I'll
that.
And I'll bring the mug there. How about
you're
that?
You're going to make me carry the mug at the Nick game. Way to go, Ryan.
Thanks for being here, man.
I'm happy to be here.
Yeah? Okay, cool. This way we'll just...
I love it.
We just go and
we
then
just
we
did
go.
A half yeah, a pot already.
We just did, right? Yeah, yeah. He missed like the best
yeah,
part
yeah,
right
yeah.
now.
Well, yeah, what happened? What did I miss, man? What I miss?
Talked about what it's like when your number's up on a show.
On a show.
Like
oh.
Power.
He said it's like a real life funeral.
Is it really?
Well,
yeah. What is that? That's crazy.
Yeah. So I was telling Cece before it got rolling with Power. You know, obviously a lot of characters get killed off at a moment's notice, even main characters, and you kind of find out like the night or two before, and then you get the script, and then you go to the table read, and everyone's kind of looking at you like, "Hey, you all right?" Sorry.
I mean, because basically you just lost your job, though.
Yeah.
Right? You
know that, what I'm well, saying? Like. It becomes almost like a Hard Knocks thing where like you bring your playbook and you go in and they're like and you get to like we appreciate everything we did for you. I mean you did for us and we know you're gonna catch on somewhere else.
It's not about you, right?
I'm telling you, man, I don't know why if that's maybe been a link between sports and television and movies and stuff, because it is all entertainment to a degree. Like mm-hmm. It is very much like a team. I think more so maybe television than movies, but like
yeah, because you're there every day. You shoot and you with them all the time.
Yeah, you just becomes like a team locker room kind of element. And when characters get killed off or people leave a show or new people come into a show, it's like an acquired free agent. How are you all going to mesh? I always wanted to do this like Funny or Die type sketch. Like imagine, and here's the difference between sports and entertainment. I don't have reporters covering me at my job. So if I have a bad day or if I suck in a scene, I don't have to then go answer questions about it. But imagine if, like, I always wanted to do that fake scene. Like,
yeah, that's a good idea, Jerry. That's a really good idea.
If you had like reporters there, yeah.
We should do it as a skit. You be there afterwards ready to ask Jerry, like, yeah, what
yeah,
went wrong on
we
that
should
scene,
do that. I just don't know what was going on with Kevin Connolly. I thought he was acting hard, but it's just, you know.
He didn't have it today.
We'll get him tomorrow. Big scene tomorrow.
Is this the first show that you're on where you can get killed off? Because I know Entourage wasn't, you know, it was just everything was good.
Yeah, no.
Like, you're there, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for the most part, I worked on a show last year, Shooter, based on the movie. But
oh, yeah.
I kind of went into that knowing my character was going to get killed off. Mm-hmm. So it was only like a 6-episode thing. This for sure is that element, the first time I ever had that element of... So you just don't know.
Do you hear like whispers? It's like, yo, I'm hearing you might get it this week.
Well,
like,
no, yeah. It's not even that. It's like you can watch and see.
Oh, yeah, what's happening?
You can see kind of like, that's why I said, I was like, it's getting hot for you. You know what I'm saying?
Like, so like Proctor could be going down soon. Is that what you're telling me?
It's just a lot of shit he's got going on. Okay. Put it like that.
Proctor's in the middle of it. Really?
Yeah. Does that make you, as someone who doesn't know yet if you're going to live or die in this show, does that make you nervous?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. It doesn't. I find myself trying to justify, like, there's this big moment that happened last year. If you haven't watched season four yet, close your ears. But
oh, no, you can tell them now. Yeah, I mean, it's too late. If you ain't watched season four yet, fuck you. It's too late.
My character, knowing stuff is starting to go sideways, hangs on to a big piece of evidence that could bring the whole shit that.
You can curse.
Brings the whole shit down. Character holds on to this piece of evidence, and the audience is the only one that knows. And that's all people want to let me know now in the street. Yeah. Someone said it to me walking over here. Proctor, really? What'd you do with the laptop? What are you going to do with that? Don't do anything with that laptop. I'm like, oh, man.
Yo, that, but it's interesting. So you're getting, when you're in the street, do you get more Turtle or you get more Proctor?
I bet you here you get more Proctor, huh?
Here I get more Proctor. I'm going to wrap this into sports, too. My wife and I went to the Knicks game a couple nights ago. We were on the train, and packed train because everyone's going to the Knick game, and this group of dudes, you could tell that maybe they were on their way to some kind of nightly activity.
Okay.
Might have had a few drinks, all that, and all it was just, it was Turtle Entourage. They were going through episodes. Cool. We get out of the train, we come up, we're walking to the garden, like two blocks away, and there was like a group of kind of like 17, 18-year-old kids. Walked up there like, oh shit, it's Proctor. It's the, I might be one of the few guys who are like, I'm typecasted twice. It's like one half is this and one half is this. And it kind of disproves the whole theory of typecasting in general. Because if that really, and it is a thing, I have a whole hot take on that. But if typecasting is really what it is, then that shouldn't have been able to happen again.
Right.
Right. That's true. Yeah. Right. You'd just be Turtle and that's it. You're Urkel and that's and you know, that's Urkel. Your life. That's it. Hey, I don't know. What is Jaleel White doing?
Do we I haven't know? Seen him do anything.
Because that's a tough one to break, man. Of every role of all time, that feels like that one would
be.
Or
I just
impossible.
Even feel like when guys play like the guy that played Biggie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that type of you know, that's,
like a biopic.
Yeah,
type
when
deal,
you play
yeah.
that, I feel like you just get stuck into that character sometimes. You know?
I feel like the times also have a lot to do with it. Like around that time with Family Matters and Jaleel White, it really was like if you were on TV, you were a TV person, and you didn't do movies. And if you were in movies, you definitely didn't do TV. And that crossover started quite a while ago, where more people have only done movies or doing television, and now there's guys and girls starring on TV shows and a part of comic book franchises. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that's helped. I also think now there's so many other avenues and platforms to show more range in what you could do. So
social media, things
yeah,
like
there's
that.
Just so many ways to show. See, I'm not just Turtle. I could also do this, and you might not have known, but I could do this. So I just think the rules are a little different. I think evolution has kind of happened. And I believe with typecasting, like it absolutely can and will happen if you just want to coast off of the one thing that you did and don't really want to work hard and add a new pitch or add a new move in the post. If you don't want to add a new layer, you can be absolutely stuck in something.
Is there a difference working from HBO to Starz? Like, is that a difference with the networks or?
You know what? Not really. And I'll tell you maybe why. Starz is run by a guy who used to run HBO, who was very much responsible for Sopranos, Sex and the City, The Wire, Oz, and Entourage. He cast me, along with the producers of the show, cast me in Entourage, and now he runs Starz. So
all those shows are great, too.
Oh, you know every single like, one you mentioned is like, yo, that's my, like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he Chris Albrecht is his name. I mean, he brilliant, brilliant guy behind a lot of those shows. He was running the network. He kind of created that whole premium cable television thing.
That's great. Speaking of like typecasting, going back to like the first time I like Bob Saget, when I saw him on Entourage, I was like, this guy's the greatest.
Wait, hold on,
I love him.
That's like, Danny Tanner, right? Man. Like, yeah, exactly.
Did you expect that?
Yeah, no, exactly.
I did not
right.
expect that at all. You know, I had never seen him, you know, like anything other than Full House.
Yeah, exactly.
So
right.
like when he was on Entourage, I was like, this is great.
And for anybody who didn't see Danny Tanner on Entourage, he is like this dirty perv who's got he's got a mouth on him, man. It's hilarious.
He's living next door to a Hollywood madam. Yeah. If we can curse on this, my character has the line to Kevin Dillon. I say, "Did you just get cock blocked by Bob Saget?" And Bob's a great guy, and his stand up, like, if you see his stand up, you kind of then see, oh, you see his sense of humor, and it is not Danny Tanner.
No, it's not.
You know what I always, in our PC culture, and more invasive it becomes, I always wonder, like, what that's like for a comedian. Because it used to just be like, hey, no, that's comedy. You can say whatever you want over there, and you're okay. But now I feel like if I was a comedian, I'd be like, towing a totally different line.
Yeah, you have to.
Is it okay because it's just funny, or do I have to worry about offending people now?
You know, just from the, I am not like in that world. That is a world I have a great deal of respect for, because I respect all things I'm afraid of.
Yeah.
You know, and being a stand-up comic is something I'm afraid of. To me, that is something I don't have that ability. I don't have that talent. It's just is not there with me. If you write me some stuff, I can maybe go be funny, but
we've seen many examples of that.
But
yes.
I have a few friends who are comics and comedians, and they're very aware of that, but I think, at least in my conversations with them, they're not gonna kind of become PC. They're gonna stick true to what their form is.
Good. Yeah.
That's, I mean, just from the few comedy friends I have, they're not,
we've kind of seen that too. I mean, guys get in trouble, it is what it is, it blows over after a couple days, and right. then you know, you're back to doing your thing.
Like, it was a joke. Like, yeah, this is what, it, yeah. We even told you, like, hey, you're at a comedy show, like, ahead of time, if you can't take
but
it.
But for sure, the lines are all getting
it's different now.
For sure.
You know, everything.
You mentioned something before where you were just talking about, like, hey, if you want to not be typecast, then you got to learn, right? Like, okay, learn a new pitch or, like, a new move in the post. I always wonder this, like, how do you, like, what do you do to get better as an actor?
Well, and this is kind of like the my frustrations I've had, and I even tell if I'm talking to even like a young actor or anyone ever asks me for advice, not that anyone ever should, but all I could offer is patience, because the frustrating thing is, like, you know, you could go out and throw 100 pitches a day working on something, and that will translate at some point. You'll be able to show that off. As an actor, you can go out and work on comedy, or you can go out and work on drama, and there's a good chance that no one's ever really gonna even see the work you're putting in. You know, I can't wake up and be like, tomorrow I want to act, tomorrow I want to go do something cool. Like, I have to wait till someone tells me I'm allowed to go do what I love to do. And listen, I am not crying the blues over here. I've been extremely lucky and fortunate, and I in no way am complaining, but that's the hard thing. That's what I tell any younger person who's getting into this. Like, make sure you love it, because it's designed to make you quit a little bit. So if you love it and it's really important, it's a passion, you'll be okay. You'll be able to withstand the ups and downs. But if you're kind of like half in, half out, or if you want to just be famous and you don't really enjoy the craft of acting, you're done for.
It's going to crush you, probably.
Yeah, you're done for. You won't be able to handle it.
But do you do, like, classes still and stuff? Like, how does that – or, like
– honestly, I don't. The biggest thing I did if we're talking about, like, trying to get out or add a pitch.
Exactly.
I just got myself in good shape. But that wasn't just for acting. That was also, like, a life choice. When I was 30 years old, I was 205 pounds, and I'm 5'7", barely. So I was I mean, I had a lot of other unhealthy habits. So a lot of it at first was just, I need to get healthy. I'm on a bad track here. But then I started really getting addicted to something good, finally, for a change. And people started seeing me differently, which part of me was like, this is really fucked up, because now they're seeing, oh, like, you're a funny dude, you're a nice guy. I'm like, yeah, I've always been.
But now
you're taking the time to notice now, because why? Because
you're not slovenly anymore.
But now it's actually funny. Like, I'll get an audition or a meeting for something where it's kind of like the lovable sidekick, and they're like, can he do that? I'm like, can he do that? That's my stress, what I do.
Well, you know, like, when Jonah Hill went through that whole thing where they're like, well, now that he's not fat, can he still be funny? And I don't know if he's skinny Jonah or fat Jonah right now.
He goes up and down, man.
This, like, dude is going back and forth, man.
But still, what
he's hilarious to me, though.
He is
all
hilarious.
The time.
Always.
And believe me, Jonah Hill at 160 pounds is not less funny than Jonah Hill. He is an extremely funny. It doesn't go away. He didn't lose his comedic sense of timing along with some weight.
It's,
so.
You know what? It's always weird, though. CeCe and I have talked about this a little bit in the past. We talked about it with Fat Joe, and we had him on, too. Mm-hmm. Like, CeCe, obviously, in his job, weight is evaluated, and CeCe's a big guy, so mm-hmm. he's gone through that publicly, yeah. losing weight, gaining weight, whatever. And as an actor, you do, too. Like, you guys get... Like,
you get scrutinized big time,
man,
yeah.
Man, like, for things that other people, like, if you're around, like, your friend or your aunt or something, you're never going to say, like, oh, yeah, you look like you put on 5 pounds or whatever. You guys get, like, really scrutinized Rush. On that topic. Yeah, I guess you just got to be comfortable with it.
Like I said before, I am comfortable with it. I've always been big. It is what it is. Like, and, you know, for me, when I pitch good, then I'm, you know, the right size. When I pitch bad, I'm fat.
Of course.
So I'm used to it. You know, it is what it is. And it allows me to eat whatever the fuck I want to. So.
It's a good life. Yeah. It's a good life, man. It is, man. I know. When Jerry has a bad scene, it's like, yo, he was better when he was fat, right? When Jerry has a good scene, it's like, you know what? This skinny Jerry, it's working out for him, man. It's going all right.
Every now and then, though, yeah, people will kind of come up on the streets and be like, man, I liked you so much when you were heavier. I'm like,
what? Shut up.
That's awesome. You know what? I liked being heavier. Believe me, I liked that version too. But like, and again, it turned into something that, like, yeah, it's like now how you look. But really, for me, it was about how I felt, and yeah. it was all like I knew that going along this path. And I even had a doctor tell me, like, you're not in any physical danger, but if you continue, you know, I'm 38 now. In a couple of days, like. I remember this doctor telling me, like, when you're 40, 41, 40, it'll just be that much harder, and then we'll have this conversation. So I just tried to get a jump on things.
Mm-hmm. By the way, is there a dog somewhere in here? That's that? There is a dog. See, that's what
Players
happens on the pod, man. Yeah, that's right. They're running wild at Players Tribune, man. You know, hey, your birthday's in a couple days. When's your birthday?
November 25th.
Oh, nice, man.
Yeah, so we were talking about Thanksgiving off the air. Like, I think I was born on Thanksgiving, and every 10 years or so, my birthday's on Thanksgiving.
Oh, that'd
so.
Be awesome. Oh.
It's great. It's like your own personal Christmas. That's you get the food, family's all together, but I'm the only one who gets gifts.
That's great.
That is fantastic. It's, yeah. it's such a good holiday.
It is. That's my favorite.
Just the best, man. And like to combine that sort of just, you know, you go into Thanksgiving or a birthday kind of with that like, oh, I'm going to eat whatever I want today, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know, even if you're as disciplined as you are now, I guess.
I was. I'm not nearly as
disciplined as you are. But if you combine the two, that's dangerous,
that's
man.
That's
fun, but that's dangerous. I did last year for my I'm a November mm-hmm. baby as well, November 18th. And last year for my 30th, I did a pizza and cereal party, and just because I was like, I just basically wanted to be like a cheat day, you know, like you know, and the cereal was such a big hit. That I'm bringing it back this
You're
year.
Bringing it back,
yeah, exactly. So I'm saying, man, make your flight to the DR a little later, man. Like you might have to. Just I'll have Captain Crunch there for you, man.
Do you have a favorite all-time cereal?
Oh yeah.
What is it?
Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Oh really?
Wow. Mm-hmm. Bro, they have a Cinnamon Toast Crunch shake at Burger King right now.
No,
it's unbelievable.
Oh my
I just
gosh!
Had it the
really?
Other day.
I love that this turned into a food podcast.
Exactly.
I love it.
How about what's your favorite cereal?
I'm a Lucky Charms guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Have you done the only marshmallows?
I've done
yet?
It. That's okay. I like the
that.
Blend.
I like
though.
The only.
The actually, crunch. If you the Count Chocula was like the all-time OG.
OG cereal, yeah.
You get the chocolate milk at the end just for a little, you get dessert with the breakfast. But
yep.
Didn't they have a few different ones in the Count Chocula? Like, what was the other? There was another, like, wasn't it
Frankenberry?
Yeah, Frankenberries.
That's the age-old discussion, like.
Yeah.
That was kind of like Captain Crunch or Frankenberries, right? A little
yep.
bit.
Yeah, yeah, it was. Yeah, it was, man. Yeah. You know what else last year on my birthday, like, I was just like, because I normally, I do keto sometimes, I do low carbs, so this was like, I was going all in on this, and I hadn't had it in a while, Golden Grahams. I forgot how good Golden Grahams are,
Golden Grahams are good,
man.
Too. Like, Golden Grahams are really good.
They're fantastic. I don't know what about
even like Apple Jacks.
Yeah, you know man, I mean? Apple Jacks.
But Captain Crunch, all-time favorite, though, that for is. Me, man. Like, I can't get off of it. I haven't had it in some years now, though.
That was
it's
like the
years,
big
but
thing.
But my kids
remember?
Love it.
They
though.
Love it.
Yeah.
But that was the big thing when the one ever going into whatever season you were
oh,
going to
lose
all
that weight. Yeah.
It was like, CeCe was like, oh, I gave up. He used to have how many boxes of.
Oh, yeah, Captain Crunch. So I was like, yeah, I gave up Captain Crunch.
Captain Crunch, yeah.
They sent like it. General Mills sent me like a letter like, oh, Captain Crunch is really not bad for you. Like
they wanted you back.
They wanted me back.
They're trying to get you back on
I'm
it.
Back now, but I just, you know, my kids eat that shit now. So I'm just, take a break.
That's it. You're on sabbatical from Captain Crunch. Jerry, like Entourage. First of all, CeCe probably has all the power questions. I have to get into power still. I have to admit.
You better hurry up.
I know,
yeah,
man.
Seriously.
I know. I better hurry up before Proctor gets popped, it sounds like. Yeah. But, like, Entourage for me, I can remember when my cousin told me about Entourage. He was like, Rye, you're going to love this show. It's just like it's like you and your boys like hanging out. Mm-hmm. That's like that's what it is. Did you, when you guys were starting it out, did you know like, oh, this is going to end up having like a cult-like following to it?
Absolutely not. First and foremost, like I won't say I'm paranoid, but like when Entourage first came around, you know, I was in that stereotype of I was waiting table. I worked in every restaurant in the San Fernando Valley. I had this great routine where like I would get a job in a restaurant, waitering and all that, and then I would get like some kind of like I did two episodes of King of Queens, and I'd make like $3,000-$4,000. I'm like, done, rich. Walk into the restaurant, I do it like that dude in Half Baked. I'd be like, fuck you. Quit on the spot. Go shoot for like 2 weeks. Get paid. Live real nice. Like this, and then slowly, a month or two, three, money's gone. I'm like, got my job back. I'm sorry I cursed everybody. I did that so many times. And with Entourage, literally, I remember getting that part. I actually kept my job, but I just got some days off and we shot the pilot. Because I'm like, I'm not going to make that mistake this time. I'm trying to be grown up. And then we shoot the pilot. And what people don't realize is then we had like a 2-3 month waiting period to see if we were going to get picked up.
Damn.
So now it's like you've tasted it and you're moments away from possibly being on an HBO show, which at the time was... and still to this day, what you hope for, and like, he was waiting for that call. Like, you could get that call any moment that will change the trajectory of your life. And then there was a moment where I'm like, I'm never getting this call. It's been like 2 months. It's too long. So finally, I got the call. I quit the job. And then you start shooting the season. And early on in any TV show, you really don't know. You're still figuring out who these characters are. You're wondering, is anyone going to watch this? And then when the first season was airing, It kind of got critical acclaim, but by no means was like a runaway hit. It was a slow build. Like critics enjoyed it. Sort of the Hollywood community hadn't really embraced it at that most. I remember, too, in the sports world, it kind of caught on quick.
For me, it was like right away. Like, yeah. I remember
a lot of
first episode, like it was done. Like,
a lot of professional athletes were in on it real soon. It probably wasn't until about, I think it was like, toward the end of season two where we started saying like, okay, this is working. And by season three, we were all able to, I was just always afraid of losing my job. So I didn't really enjoy the first 3 or 4 years of Entourage. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I was just always afraid that at some moment it was going to get taken away from me.
Wow.
I really was. So by the fourth season though, then you were kind of dug in. It's like, okay, we got some job security. Let's enjoy this.
Did you guys know each other at all before Entourage?
No, none of you guys?
I did not meet them until so every show, or at least back then, you do a network test. So they bring in like three people for each character. You're in a room half the size of this, and you're literally looking around. It's like, oh yeah, there's the Turtles, and there, oh, those guys are definitely the E's, and there's the Vinces. There, I believe there was only one Johnny Drama. Kevin Dillon.
So,
you know, you go in and you do like a solo portion. And I've told this story a couple of times before. I went in and bombed the solo part where it's just you and you're in this room and it's Chris Albrecht, it's Doug Ellen, it's Steve Levinson, it's Mark Wahlberg. It's all the, and you're in like a dark room. You can't really see in there. You're on stage.
And this is Boston Market Jerry walking
in
there. Yeah,
I'm 22 years old. I'm still like, I mean, I'm still very New York, but even then it was even more so, and I just bombed. And I went back out in the waiting room, and they'll literally send you home at that point. Like if they know you're not the guy or the girl, they'll come out and say, you can go. So I'm just waiting.
Just like that.
And then this is almost like out of an episode. Mark Wahlberg comes out of that scary room and he's like pointing in my direction and like motioning someone over, and I'm looking around like, who the hell? I've never met Mark Wahlberg. I'm like, who's he motioning to? And I realize it's me. So I kind of get up and I walk over there. I'm like, he's going to tell me to go home. I can't believe this shit. And like, he kind of puts his arm around me and he's like, you're blowing it, bro. I'm like, what? He's like, listen, this is a big opportunity. You're better than that. I've watched your tapes. I've seen all your stuff up until this. Go do what you've been doing. Don't be nervous. There's no time for that. Just go in. I don't care about the script, the lines. Just go do what you've been doing. Be you. Do what you've been doing. And that kind of like was the best cup of coffee I could have ever had. It like snapped me right into it. And wow. Then the next phase is they mix and match you. So, and sure enough, I walk in a room and they paired me with Kevin Connolly. Mm. And we did the scene, not to bring up his name, we mentioned Derek Jeter's name in the scene where I talk about this girl who wants to give me head, I believe in the scene. And I say, and Kevin Connolly's character is like, did you tell her that? I'm like, no, I told her I love Derek Jeter first, then I told her that. And we did that scene in the test and we just had instant chemistry, and they were even laughing, and they're like, that room is designed to not, they don't laugh,
they don't react to anything.
I mean, unless rarely.
Gosh, that would make me so nervous. Rarely. You're gonna be getting any cues from them to know how it's going.
So we heard some laughter, and then all right, you're in there for like, feels like a 4-hour process. So then finally at the end of the day, I've made it through. It's like American Idol almost. And it was me, Kevin Connolly, and then they brought in Kevin Dillon. And they had Adrien Grenier wasn't there. He was out of town or something. So they had someone else there for the role of Vince. But the three of the four were there, and we read a scene. And we kind of went out in that waiting room, and there wasn't really anyone else there. It's like, holy shit, I might have did it.
Wow.
And I got the call. Thankfully, later that night, they didn't make me wait 2 days to say, hey, you got the part.
They called you that night to say you got the part.
Later that, well, yeah, at that point, I had gotten to know the producers, Doug Allen, Steve Levinson, well, because I've auditioned 30 times at this point. So I think it was Doug Allen who called me and was like, you got the part. Let's try and meet up in the next few days and start rehearsing and all this. And I'm like, I finally got to make that call to my mom. I was like, Mom, I got the part. And she's like, that's great. But you just don't know what lies ahead. So many pilots get shot and never get picked up. And you just, it's the first step. But at that moment, to longly answer your question, it was the first time I ever set eyes on Kevin Dillon and Kevin Connolly was in that room.
That's incredible. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
It's amazing. Yeah, because also, like, with the chemistry that you guys all had, like, you think, I mean, I guess those friendships, they develop, because it seems like you guys are all kind of boys now, but...
Yeah, but it's the weird thing, like, chemistry is... And I'm trying to think of, like, the sports equivalent. I guess it's the same thing. It's chemistry. Like, it's something that you can't put a roster together and account for. It's something you can't put a cast together and say, well, this cast is going to have great chemistry, or this roster of guys or girls is going to have amazing chemistry. It's the lightning in the bottle.
It just happens.
Yeah, and I've seen situations where, even with, like, with men and women, it doesn't always mean you're going to be best friends off air. Like, sometimes you just have something on screen and it's that. But in this case, we hit it off instantly. You know, most of the guys grew up in New York as well, so we all had that in common.
And are you guys all still boys?
Yeah,
that's good.
I think I met you guys all together at Prime 112.
Prime 112, when we were shooting the movie.
Doug, when
nice,
they were shooting the movie,
man.
Yeah.
When it comes to Entourage, Jerry, because I got, you know, and now's like my chance to ask all these questions like I have about it. But like, this was another question a lot of people asked us. And this is actually, I'll give a shout out to my boy Al, my best friend. I officiated his wedding this weekend. And
very
so
nice.
I was with him.
Oh,
yeah. It was awesome, man. It was fun. Of course, I had that crowd cracking up. It was good. I said to him, I was like, we used to always watch Entourage together. Like, that was the thing. Me and my boys, we all get together and watch it, you know? And he was like, so I was like, I'll ask a question from you. And he was like, well, you just got to ask him, like, which character is most like. Is which person is most like their character in real life from Entourage?
You know, it is a good question. And I swear, I'm not even trying to make like a kind of nice answer about it. There really is elements of all of the characters that are a little like they really are. And there's so many differences. It's hard to really, like, I think there's a lot of similarities between me and Turtle.
Yeah.
You know, I very much was like that, but that was like that was like the teenage version of me.
Yeah.
I think we have a lot of similar traits. Like, the loyalty was always the thing I loved about the character, but like...
Hooking up with Jana Kramer.
Well, yeah. but like, I was always way more in my own head. Like, that dude had like no filter. Life was a party. I'm like the opposite. I'm always like, who's going to come and do something bad at this party. We gotta be on guard here. I had a very paranoid mother, a very paranoid single mother.
You look for the exits before you walk in.
That was my mom. My mom used to make us say prayers on airplanes and would literally be like, if something happens to the plane and we have to land in the water, just get out. Mommy will find you.
What?
I'm 8 years old. This just is 1987. I'm like, Mommy, what's going to happen to the plane?
Yo, why are we on this thing right now?
Like me, her, my brother, holding hands, saying prayers.
That would scare the hell out of me.
Now, granted, she kept us very safe. Yeah. But I can say the same thing, like Kevin Connolly has a lot of similarities with E in terms of, like, E always had a savviness to him. Kevin Connolly's very savvy. But, like, a lot of differences, you know, I think there's a fine balance. I think there was a little bit of the real us in each of these guys, but there were significant differences. Like, Kevin Dillon has a little Johnny Drama in him. I don't think you could play that character as well as he did without having a little of that in you. But, I mean, the differences are night and day. There's so many separations. I mean, it's ridiculous. So it's a tough one to answer because there's no one that's like, oh,
no, that's
God.
That's a good answer, though.
He just wakes up, rolls out of bed, and he's ready to work. There were characters developed over years and years and years.
Did I see that Kevin, brought Sloan, which is Emmanuel Shriek, is that how we say her name, to your wedding? Did they go together? Or was
that
like
a joke? They came together, but, you know, again, we go back to literally 2003, you know. Emmanuel is like my sister in a lot of ways, and we all had a very brotherly relationship with her. And believe me, there's so many guys that come up to me like, Emmanuel Shriek, oh my God, it's my dream girl. And I'm like, yeah, it's like my sister. And they look at me like I'm nuts.
Yeah.
But they were just coming from L.A. together, so they hopped on the same plane.
Okay, I got you. See, I'm like, I'm into all this stuff, man.
You are. Like,
I want to know, like, who's dating. But you, now, did you date? You dated Jamie.
I did. That was real. Yes.
Yeah, that was real. Okay.
Yes.
So I know people who like date their co-stars and stuff like this. Is it hard to do that?
Well, see, we started dating before I believe she came on the show.
Oh, okay.
I think I'm old, man. I don't even really remember. Or maybe it was right around the time. It was not an on-set romance. Like I remember it did not start on set.
Got you.
I didn't think it was difficult. Because then she came on, did a full season, and we were already very much a couple. So it was actually kind of cool to go to work, and you got your girl there and kind of go home after that. And then, like, there were times, like, she's working and I'm off, and it was cool. I don't say it was weird, but then, like, when her run on the show kind of ended, it's like, it's not like a now what, but, like, obviously, it's never easy, like, leaving a show or anything like that, but you know, she went into, like, something else right away. I found it to be very enjoyable and liked it. I didn't see it to be – I know some people always say don't ever work with someone you're dating or anything like that. I don't know. It didn't bother me. It didn't hurt our relationship in any way at the time.
I just feel like it'd be hard not to. Like, I mean, if you're in the same spot all the time with, like – I don't know. If you're both single and you have to have chemistry anyway, you got to manufacture it or whatever. It'd almost be like to me, like, telling you, like, oh, don't be friends with your teammates. Like – well, you know, like, what do you mean don't be friends with my teammates? Like, we're here all the time. Like, what am I supposed to do? Like,
especially if we got that chemistry and stuff,
yeah. Listen, I mean, that's just been going on long before Entourage. But, you know, I don't know. It's a slippery slope. I've always tried to come from a place of not...
Yeah.
Not that I'm not trying to mix, like, personal relationships and work, but, like, it is fake life that we're trying to portray here. So there's a fine line of what's real and what's not when you start talking about the emotions of it with a co-star and all that. And but yeah, I found that experience on that level to be working with her great.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
You know, I've gone into the clubhouse and seen this guy watching Power in the clubhouse. I've seen this before.
It's a big rich town.
I watch clubhouse. So yeah, you know, I haven't gotten into it yet, as I admitted, and I'm going to change that soon. It's my next show I'm doing. It's my next show I'm doing. But like, what? See, tell me about Power. Like, what? Why is this show gripping you so much?
It's just a good. It's got good storylines.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like a bunch of different storylines for me that I like. It's just. I mean, it's just a good show. It's like good acting.
Especially Proctor.
Were you in from the beginning?
I was in from the beginning.
When it aired, you were on it?
It was in from the beginning, and I was like teetering. I was like, I don't know. And then I watched the first full season and came back the second season. I was like, all right, this is my
first
show.
First season's always the roughest.
It's almost like
there's exceptions.
I don't know. Yeah, you're right. Like the first season is always like where you don't know.
Figuring it out.
Mm-hmm. And then after that, I mean, it's a great show. Yeah. It turned out to be, I mean, 50 is a genius, man. And
yeah, he's the EP almost, of the show or what?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's incredible.
And he's in the show.
And he's great in the show.
Is like, he really?
Yeah.
He acts, man. Produces, and at every table reading, you know, you go around before because, you know, Power has – I've been doing this a long time, and there's always table reads. Power, the table reads are literally like theater. Like, there's, like, every cast member. Like, people – we take it very seriously, every producer. So there's, like, rooms of, like, 50, 60 people in these table reads. And you go around the room and be like, hey, Jerry Ferrara, Joe Proctor. Everyone goes and introduces, and it gets to 50, and it's literally, like, 50 Cent, Curtis Jackson, executive producer. I play Kanan, also head of marketing and PR. Like, like, and he by the way, he there's –
But you've never had a scene with him, right, in the show?
No, I haven't.
But that looks like he's coming up.
Oh,
right?
No, I don't know. I don't think so. Nah, I don't think the two, I don't know.
So I'm thinking like, if you have a scene with him, then that might be bad.
Then it's bad. It's fucked up.
No, no, I don't have a scene with him. This is called, I don't want to be fired. I don't want to be fired.
But is it like, because are you a hip hop fan?
Yeah,
too, Jerry?
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, I figure. But like.
That's what I was about to say. My non-sports cameo on Entourage favorite was Eminem.
Eminem. That was a
the
great
season finale
one.
That year. That was unbelievable.
That was fantastic.
That was a great cameo.
And that's my favorite artist of all time.
Right, I know. That was my favorite non, like, no, seriously. He was great in that, though.
He was great in that.
Yeah.
And that was the season finale of that year, too.
That was
the episode that he was
wasn't it a record release party or something?
It was a
Mika
record
was
release
in that episode
party.
Too.
Yes,
she was.
Yeah, Mika was in that episode.
Cece, honestly, dude, you.
Right? I'm telling
Whenever you're done, though, you got to jump to this side of the world. When you're ready, because you got. You don't forget a thing, but yeah, and like not to make an analogy, but this is something I'm sure you could relate to too. It's like, so for a long time, I'm getting to the Eminem point. You know, after like season 5, season 6, some of the fan comments were like, oh, everything on Entourage is always ends well and life is too good. Like, where's like the dark side of Hollywood? The show's bullshit. Hollywood's not that easy. So, and it just happened to time out. You know, you start thinking of things to always do to the Vince character because he is the engine that drives the show. What happens to him happens to us. That was the season that the Vince character had, like, the drug problem, and it was a darker season. So that was the darker season. 4 episodes in. I hate this dark shit Entourage is doing. What is it? What are they doing? I watched this show to get relief from my real life. Why are they doing this? But the Eminem stuff was, like, the rock bottom point for the Vince character where he was on a drug binge and the porn star stuff, and then he basically gets tuned up by Eminem at a record release rude to Minka Kelly.
Yeah. Did you get to meet him when he came in?
Very briefly, because again, I'm not in that scene.
Right.
I'm wondering. I don't know why I'm not in these scenes. But
that's where you pull, I don't know, Doug or Mark or whatever.
I was on
aside.
Set that day, and I got to say what's up. He was happy to be there and super cool guy on set, cool to everyone.
Yeah.
And obviously, I don't need to also give another glowing review to him. He's unbelievable.
He is.
Genius.
By the way, I can tell you have some acting genes.
No chance.
You don't think so?
No, I'm the worst actor ever.
Really?
Bro. I'm horrible. I can't even fucking read these commercials that we do, bro. I'm terrible at acting.
Well, maybe
I can just come in and do like this and like be myself, I'm fine. But like, if I have to like.
But you did good when we did that skit where you dressed up as Kylo Ren. I thought you were a natural.
Yeah,
man.
Well, I mean, that's just easy, though. You know what I'm saying? But like, because that's me, though. I'm myself.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, I did these Toyota commercials, me and Amber, back in the day, and they are the worst fucking commercial that you've ever seen in your life. Like, me reading off a little board, like, it was terrible.
Maybe we
like
could make up for the lack of an Entourage cameo with Power and just kind of write that. I feel like.
Do it.
I would.
If you suck, your scene might get cut.
I always get jealous when I see like athletes in shows. Like when I saw Melo and Sons of Anarchy, I was like, "What the fuck? Like, why can I be in these shows, man? Like, these are my shows too." Like,
and once was Noah Syndergaard in Game of Thrones this
year?
Yeah,
he was in Game of Thrones this year.
Is that right? I missed that. I'm a Game of Thrones fan, too.
Yeah,
that one slipped
was
by
there.
Me.
That's our thing, man. I just met him for the first time last night. He was a good kid.
Did you?
Yeah, he was
you
a
met
dude.
Noah?
Yeah.
Big boy.
Oh,
big
my
dude.
Gosh,
yeah,
man.
I saw him in the
bro.
Knicks game. I was like, geez.
He was a nice guy, though.
You know what? I give you credit, Jerry, because I know the only thing on your mind these days is the Knicks, and you've been patient with Power and Entourage questions.
For without, 45 yeah, minutes, yeah, you yeah, exactly. questions about with, fucking...
I know, I love the show, man. Without having... Dude, I've seen... You've been courtside now for the KP show this year.
I have been.
Is he the MVP so far?
He might be, right? Or him or Giannis, but the Knicks have a better record
you
right
love
now.
Giannis.
I love Giannis.
You love Giannis,
I do,
bro.
Man, I do. I love Giannis.
I have his game so many emotions with this team because... I firmly believe in loyalty. Like, I was talking about how I love the Turtle character because he was loyal, and that's what I think is the most I have in common. Like, I am loyal to the Knicks. Like, I was there at games last year. I was there the year before. Like, I don't come around when things are good, and I don't bail when things are bad. And I'm like that with all my sports teams that I love.
So who is that, Knicks?
Knicks, Yankees, Rangers, Giants.
Okay.
Hockey gave me a little bit of a bitter taste when they locked the players out in like 95, the year after the Rangers won the cup. I was like 13 years old and I just didn't understand it. I'm like, we have a great team. We got Messier. These guys, why are they not playing? So that hurt my hockey fandom for a little while. But yeah, I mean, we talk about the 80s Yankees. Nobody wants to really talk about those rosters. Don't talk about Butch Weiniger, yeah. Mike Pagliarulo, Alvaro Espinosa, the best bunter in the league. That's what he was known for. That was every time Phil Rizzuto said, Alvaro Espinosa.
He knows his shit, man.
Alvaro Espinosa, really, he could lay down a bunt. Andy Hawkins threw a no-hitter and lost to the Chicago White Sox. That doesn't happen often.
Never.
I watched that whole entire game.
Yeah. Wow,
you know,
man.
Dave Righetti led the league in saves. We had the worst record in baseball. It didn't make sense. So that's why when the Yankees popped off in the 90s, I was front and center being as obnoxious as I possibly could because I went through that.
Yeah. That's how I feel about the Raiders, bro.
Yes. Yes.
Like, I love that they suck because when they get good, I'm going to tell everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm going to wear Raiders shit everywhere. Yes. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's like...
You already wear Raiders shit.
Everywhere, no matter what. Yeah. So, like...
Dude, but it's true because then you claim them. So, were you into this postseason then as well with these guys?
Oh, my God.
Dude, this team was so fun, wasn't it?
It was fun to watch.
It was a beautiful thing to watch, and I love nothing more. And that's why, like, we were talking earlier about, like, the hot take and all that stuff. It's like, I look at it like journal is a part of the word journalistic, which to me is more long form, long term. Like, and if you talk about this past Yankee season, they're rebuilding. It's a youth movement. That's the hot take for the moment. But if you just now lay out the narrative story, there was clearly something else going on,
right? Yeah.
And it laid out as a beautiful story right in front of us, and that was awesome to watch as a Yankee fan, but I think as a baseball fan, because you didn't really expect it, but maybe we should have. Who knows?
And you want to talk about chemistry? Like, that happened day one,
right?
Like, we all got along from the beginning, like right away, and it was just, we're gonna fight for each other. And like, when that happens. And you get a core like that when it's young, that lasts for however many years that those guys are there.
Yeah.
And they get that feeling and that taste and, like, this is how it's supposed to be. Like, we all pull for each other. So that clubhouse is going to be great for a long time.
And correct me if
just
I'm
just because of what happened at the beginning of spring training this
and
year.
That's interesting.
That doesn't always happen. I'm not asking you to call out a particular season, but that doesn't always happen.
Bro, I've been on teams in Cleveland. I've been on teams in here where we had a lot of talent, but it just –
It didn't mesh.
And nobody was playing for each other. Everybody's playing for, you know, different reasons and different shit. And – you can never win baseball games like that. You can be really good and win in the regular season, but when it counts and you pulling for somebody and somebody's got to get the runner over or you got to get that run in, like, you know, when the chemistry's not there and the team's not pulling for each other, shit like that don't happen.
Yeah,
and
it really
And I've been
is,
on
like,
teams in both cities like that.
Yeah.
That's my favorite part of baseball, too, is the game changes in the play. It's just you can watch as many big games, but
so much,
you could
man.
Just tell all of a sudden you start seeing these – sometimes it's the pitching duels where, like, literally 1-0 games are the most intense things. But then you also see hitters that are so locked in, like Altuve was locked in.
It's just
so much more intense. I think more so than any sport, I think when it becomes time for postseason, it does not match what you saw in the
regular
season.
And you can even do different shit. You can take your starter out in the third inning and pitch a whole bullpen.
Right.
Because you have a day off.
You can bring an ace in the eighth inning just to get an out.
You can do whatever you want. That's why the playoffs are really exciting. You have to watch the whole shit.
It's chess.
You have to watch everything. You have to watch every game, umpires, call matters. Like, everything matters.
Well,
you know
that's
what I mean?
A huge thing for me in a postseason. Like, in a playoff game, if it could be like the third inning, no outs, nobody on. And if it's like a 1-1 pitch that, let's say, CeCe's on the mound, it should be strike two, and they call it ball two. Like, And all of a sudden it's 2-1 instead of 1-2. I'm freaking out. I'm like, damn it. Now if he walks this guy, he's going to have to throw more pitches.
And you know what? When you get one runner on in the playoffs, you're in trouble.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like, you better make some fucking pitches. You know what I'm saying? Like, it could be walk, hit, base hit, single. Like, you're in trouble. Like, you need to make pitches right away, right now.
Once CeCe emerged from the hibernation of the playoffs from R2-C2, the first thing I did was give him a big hug from all of us fans, man.
Of course.
I was like, dude, you're still out here doing your thing, man. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah, we took it off of the playoffs just so we could, so I could kind of lock it in.
I completely respect and appreciate that decision as a fan.
He's glad that you did. So then you can make the pitch with me before I steer us back to the Knicks for CC to make sure he comes back.
Oh, I'm trying, man. Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I know you want to.
I just want him to be happy, but we would love you to be back. Ultimately, I just want you to be happy, but we would love it.
So, all right. You're loyal to the Knicks no matter what.
Yes.
But aren't you a little surprised that they've played as well as they have at this point? Like, I thought they were going to be, no matter what Porzingis was doing, I thought they were going to be awful, and maybe regression to the mean happens and they end up winning 25 games.
Right.
But they're winning right now.
They're winning, yeah.
My early analysis based off of 10 games, because if you remember, I believe the team was like 7-4 last year, or they might have been 6-5
or something like that. Yeah, yeah.
They were right around.
No,
the
I think
same.
They were 14-13 or something.
They got
like
off
that,
to a decent. Went, mm-hmm. Yeah, they got off to a decent start, and then there was a cliff that was. Yeah. But I think a lot of that was due to chemistry issue,
everything that was
stuff
going
with
on.
Phil Jackson going on, which I still am not quite over, and I'm still very upset about how that all went down. But this season, and I'm not saying, oh, now the Knicks are awesome and we're gonna make the play. I'm very realistic. There's gonna be some bad losses on the road in Houston or at home. They're playing the cat. You know, it's gonna happen. That Celtics come into town and destroy them. They're a young team. So, but similar to even with the Yankees, it's like, but they're already showing some chemistry that they have. They're enjoying playing with each other. Mm-hmm. They are no one's out there to just get theirs. Like, they want to win. They want to learn. They're listening to the coach. There's one voice that's coming through, at least from what I'm seeing. I really like to, that's why I love going to the games, because I particularly pay the most attention on timeouts and stuff like that. I'm watching the
you
bench.
You do that when your ass is sitting courtside. Well,
you're sitting courtside.
I do too. Yeah, yeah.
Come on.
And I'm getting paid. So
that's the only difference. I'm like,
that's true.
Mortgaging stuff. But no, like, yeah. I they really have great chemistry. And also, they seem to have a great leader now. And
it seems like a good leader.
Interesting mix of young and veteran presence. Like, obviously, KP's young and Frank is young, but Doug McDermott's still young. He's kind of a vet, but he's, what, 25 years old?
Yeah.
He's playing fantastic. But then you get a guy, and I cannot explain or say how much I believe that Kyle O'Quinn is like the throwback to what Knicks basketball was and what that New York City grit that KP was talking about after that game. Like, that is what Kyle O'Quinn is. And I'm worried because I talking like the business side of things, like, they got too many big men. They got to make a move. Kyle O'Quinn is the most tradable asset because he's on a great contract and he's super productive this year.
You're worried they're going to deal
him?
He brings so much to the table. So yeah.
Is he playing?
He's back tonight,
so that's why they actually –
Is Beasley playing?
Yes, Beasley's been playing.
How's he been playing?
Been playing really well. He's and
he's so
contributing.
Athletic,
man.
Oh,
man. You could
oh,
just,
my so gosh. Good,
He
man.
Had a few spin moves in the game against Sacramento that I was like up and unders.
He's incredible.
You remember a couple years ago, Beasley finished the year in Houston off the bench and played well when Jason Terry was there also.
Yep. Uh-huh. Yep.
Yeah.
And then last year was in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember Jason Terry and Terry was there also. And him talking about Beasley and saying, like, you know, they kind of had a conversation about bench mentality, whatever, at the end of Houston. And he embraced it. And those two kind of bonded or whatever. And last year, when he was healthy, he got hurt in the second half of the year. He was actually useful for Milwaukee. And he had kind of taken to that role finally, because it's good to have an athletic guy who can come off the bench
and
get some buckets.
Yeah, exactly.
He could get you 20.
You need those kind of guys.
Yeah.
He could get you 20 on any night. Catch him on the right night, give you 30. So it's a really fun team. I think it's going to be a very, very bumpy road still going forward. That's why, like, I'm enjoying this first stretch, the first 10 games.
Yeah.
I'm they're already surpassed my expectations. And now let's see what happens the next 10. But I think it's all trending upward now, because I think now free agents will be more likely to go there.
This has got to be a destination, like a spot that guys want to play. You know what I mean? It wasn't before because, you know, what was going on with Phil and everything.
Right. That was.
But now it's got to be a place where guys want to play. You want to go come play with KP. Like, it's got to be. It's New York City. Like, it's the Knicks. It's like.
That's what his year should be about.
This should
making
be,
it attractive to
this
everyone
should
else.
Be attractive.
And the jump that he's made, and honestly, the man crush on Porzingis, it might be all time for me.
Really?
It might be all time.
He could be like your
crush.
Number one athlete man crush.
More than Linsanity?
Yes, I think so. I had it with Linsanity for sure, but there did always feel this moment of like, all right, this is going
to
end.
It's coming.
Yeah,
it's coming to an end.
This is
going to.
This is too magical.
Yeah.
Like, but
like with KP,
with
you
KP,
feel like he could
you
be
might
Dirk.
Be. This might
this
be.
This could be. This
right,
could
he
be
could just be this good.
The next 15 years.
Yeah,
you know
right.
what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like,
well, let me ask you guys this question then.
You see Dirk trying to guard LeBron the other day?
No, man.
The
was
ISO.
It,
did
was
you see
it,
that?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
was it ridiculous?
It was horrible. He couldn't even move.
You can't ask him to do that anymore, man. Come on.
It was bad.
So
it
in this
bad.
City, let me ask you, if you could have, and this is a question posed by one of the crack producers of the R2C2 podcast, Corey Miller, Fordham grad as well. WFB shout out. If you could have the future of Odell, Judge, or KP, you could only choose one. Who would you choose? Don't act like you're good friends and teammates with one of them, CeCe.
No. For me, it would be Odell Beckham.
Really?
The guy's a superstar, bro. Like,
you would
just
choose Beckham?
The way he moves and, like, how he gets to people and, like, I mean, he could be – he could be like a generational athlete. That guy is unbelievable.
He is
when
unbelievable.
He gets his hands on the ball.
It's crazy.
He's going to the house.
I've never seen somebody way, like that.
And so how athletic he is, where he can go to Europe and go mess with soccer. You know what I mean? Like he's marketable, I feel like. And he can do everything easily.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to answer this in two parts. First part is my initial gut instinct was telling me Judge, because I do believe, like, to be an all-time great Yankee, see, like, it lasts a lifetime.
Yeah.
It's just, it's never forgotten. It's always and they do a really good job, I think, of letting remembering what, you know, the greats
sure.
have done.
Yeah, this organization.
Yeah. They do. They
yeah.
do
but that
job.
Being said, I'm going to go with KP, and here's why. And this is why I did an hour-long podcast that not many people listen to, probably. Kevin Durant definitely didn't listen to it. It was my pitch to why Kevin Durant should go to the Knicks before he signed with Golden State, which was one championship in New York with the Knicks
oof.
Is like three anywhere else.
Oof.
True.
Because
yeah,
it's,
it
the culture is so starved for it. The Knicks fans are so starved. And the reason why I answer KP is if he's able to, in the next 10 years or whatever, bring a championship to the Knicks and to the fans –
bro, that might put him on, like...
It'd be all-time level.
Like, a Knicks championship, like, that star puts you on, like, Derek Jeter's level.
Absolutely, I agree. That's what I'm saying.
One.
With one. It
that's
does.
True.
Cause this,
right. That's true.
Because this
one.
City loves hoops.
Yeah.
It loves
this is
hoops.
A, this is a basketball town,
it is.
For sure.
It is.
Like,
it is. It's a basketball town.
I mean, the Yankees
town.
Dominated because we're good, you
yeah.
know what I mean? And we've always been good, I guess.
Yeah.
Except for the 80s. But
yeah. There were flashes.
But, I mean, this is a hoops town.
But it's a
I mean,
it's town.
Basketball courts all over this fucking city. And whoever, yeah, whoever
brings
that.
It takes, like, a game. Like, one good game from the Knicks, and all of a sudden the city's, like, a buzz. Like, mm-hmm. yo, how about these Knicks? Like, it's crazy. I can remember at the height of Linsanity, I might have told you this story. I was at dinner, and I was sitting at a table where I was, like, in earshot of three different tables. One table had, like, 2 7-year-old women. I'm ballparking. They could have been 68 or they could have been, you know, 78. I don't know. They're somewhere in that age group. Another table had a dad and a couple kids. And another table had a few middle-aged men. Every single table was talking about Jeremy Lin. And I was like, my gosh, talk about, like, just if you want just anecdotal evidence for a story taking over the city. And I understand he transcended basketball, certainly, yep. with the way his stardom blew up in that moment in time. But it also had a Knick factor.
Mm-hmm.
When
yes.
the Knicks are good here, it does something different to this city.
Big time.
I mean, I grew up here, you know, born and raised in Brooklyn. And the night we were talking about the 80s Yankees. Well, the 90s Knicks were, I mean, this town was... It was all people wanted to talk about because
yeah.
it was a fun team. And obviously you had the rivalry with Jordan and then the Reggie Miller stuff. And it, for me, it just timed out with my age, like I was just starting to really get, like the first game I really ever watched where I sort of begun to understand what was going on was the Trent Tucker shot, I believe, which now has the Trent Tucker rule.
Catch and shoot
time. I think it was on Martin Luther King Day. I think the catch and shoot time. And I was just transfixed by the Knicks at that moment. So, and then I think they won a series that they were supposed to lose against the Celtics early in Patrick Ewing's kind of career before they were the 90s Knicks. And I watched that team take shape. And I mean, I'm not too much of a man to admit it. I cried.
Oh, yeah.
When they lost game 7 against the Rockets.
Me too, man.
I rewatched.
Yeah, I did too. I remember crying and then I felt good because I found out they dropped the trophy and it broke. I was like, how old was that? 94, I was 7. So
you were 15, I was 14, right? Yeah, about that time.
Yeah.
This happened, I think, last summer. I was on a flight with my wife. JetBlue Mint has the DirecTV, so you're watching. So I put on – it was summer, so there was the off-season for the NBA, and they run all the hardwood classics. Mm-hmm. It was a four-hour flight to New York. I re-watched Game 7 they were playing of the Knicks-Rockets series.
Oh, you're a masochist.
With her on a plane, and you would have thought it was a live game. And you could literally, if I brought my wife in here right now, and she was like, she would literally test. I was screaming. There was such a crucial moment with Oakley and a loose ball. Everything could have changed. I literally got up on the plane. I was like, Oakley! And it hurt just as much.
Isn't it amazing how, like, those moments, you know what's going to happen, and yet you still feel like, oh.
But it is interesting to watch it almost, to watch it 20 years later now and be like, wow, they really were that close. Because back then, you knew they were close, but you're just focused on the loss and the pain. But now to look at it and literally be like, my gosh, they were
they would have brought
3 minutes away. It was there.
And that's why if KP wins it, he would. See, now everyone's going to choose someone different because I would choose Judge because I think the Yankee lore, plus what I love about him is, like, this dude just hit 52 home runs, winning Rookie of the Year tonight, and is going to, you know, if he doesn't win MVP, he'll be runner-up. And he still has, like, huge things he can work out and work on, like, with his swing. Like, I'm like, what if he...
The sky's the limit.
Yeah, sky's the limit for him, for
exactly.
sure.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, what if he just cuts down his strikeouts, like, a little bit? You know what I mean? Like, he... I don't know. Could he hit 60, 65 home runs? Like, is it possible?
He could.
He could, right?
He could hit 65.
He's a great defender. He could, and he looks like he's going to work his tail off.
Yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah. That's something that he is definitely going to do. He's going to get better. He's going to figure out how to, you know, cut the strikeouts and get singles and, you know, still keep his walks. But he works his ass off. Like, he's not, you know, he's not going to be complacent with this, I guess.
Right, exactly. And he's kind of got that, like, bashful, like, you know, cool, calm, collected, like, very classy personality, you know, like KP and Odell even more so than KP, but KP certainly more so than Aaron, have like these larger than life personalities.
Especially
like
Odell.
Spotlight. Yeah, exactly. Aaron doesn't have that, but I think it almost works over the course of a marathon season. Like,
he has to be that. Yeah, you have to be, even keel to play baseball.
Right, exactly.
You can't be spotlight, man. Cause that game is, I mean, it's all about failure.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You're going to fail. It's going to humble you. So you have to just be humble and take your lumps and take the good with the bad. You're never as good as you think you are. You're never as bad as they say you are.
Now, we're trying something new. So we're going to try this game, all right? And we're going to see if it becomes an R2-C2 staple.
Is this the first time?
This is the first time.
Oh, initiation,
Jerry.
Father?
Yeah, because we knew. Yeah, you're the founding father of this game called – have you ever played Natalie Portmanteau?
No.
Okay. Which, by the way, Natalie Portman – my game 7 star.
Yeah, you love her.
I love her, man. She's my all-time ace. My all-time, like, Janet Kramer's in the starting rotation. Like, if I'm trying to win a World Series, definitely. But Natalie Portman's my game 7 star. So, Emma Watson's in there too, in case you want to know, Jerry. In case you know any of them and you want to like send them along to the R2C25. So here we go. So the name of the game is, you have one person, it'll be me in this case, describe two different movies with titles that can weave into each other. In order to win the game, someone has to name the correct title that fits with the description that is stated. For example, and you both would be guessing, if I say Dorothy and her little dog Toto find out they're no longer in Kansas anymore, while at the same time Bill Murray's immune system is fighting off a deadly virus, it would be The Wizard of Osmosis Jones. You got it?
That's
I'm
going
to be bad at this.
Yeah.
All right. An 8-year-old troublemaker must protect his house from a pair of burglars when he is accidentally left home by his family during Christmas vacation. On the other side of the world, a Navy SEAL and his team set out on a mission to capture or kill a notorious Taliban leader. The SEALs run into trouble when they meet mountain herders, and their leader must work to stay alive after the rest of his team is taken out.
I can't think of the second movie, though.
This is real cheap, though. Cause I'm in the
second movie.
It's not fair. It's not fair.
I can't think of the name of the second movie.
You've seen it though.
Home Alone Survivor.
Home Alone Survivor.
It's not fair. I'm in the movie. And I guess maybe you did that on purpose.
Yes,
but
that was on purpose.
Okay.
That was on purpose. But
spotted me where they spotted me one.
Spotted Jerry one. Are they competing against each other? So is that like a point for Jerry?
So that's a point for Jerry.
Okay. Oh, all right, got you. All right. I didn't even know if we were gonna make it like that, but if we can make it a competition, right?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it.
Or we could work together.
Point for Jerry. Okay. By the way, Lone Survivor is an unbelievable movie.
Awesome. Yes, it
is.
Awesome.
Oh, my gosh. It's good. Awesome and so movie. Is Home Alone, obviously. Holiday season. That'll be in the rotation. Okay. A divorced father and his ex-con older brother resort to bank robbing in order to save... You know what I'm realizing? There's answers on the back,
Oh,
too.
No. I promise I'm not looking.
I didn't look, no.
You didn't look?
I mean, I saw the shit, but I didn't look.
Okay. That's good. That's like I was listening, but I didn't hear, right? There goes my MBA schedule. It's all right. Oh, here we go. A divorced father and his ex-con older brother resort to bank robbing in order to save their family's ranch in West Texas, while Adam Sandler is an assistant for a college football team and discovers he has a unique tackling ability and becomes a member of the team.
I got it.
Water
you got
boy.
It?
Hell or High Water Boy?
Wow, Jerry!
That's unbelievable.
Yo, man, he's 2 for 2.
I feel like Rosie Perez and White Man Can't Jump. When she goes on Jeopardy, and it just starts.
She's on Jeopardy, and she's locked in.
Foods that start with the letter Q?
That's it.
What is a quince? I'm locked in. She was so locked in on
she
Jeopardy.
She was so
man.
Locked in.
Yo, you got, let's see. All right, man. You
Stookie
got,
Brothers.
The way he got her on that, the way he got her on the show was
great. It was great. It was great.
We have 5 questions. You got a 2-0 lead. Now, CeCe has
this
come back from 2-0 deficits.
We know CeCe's come back from 2-0 deficits. Oh, gosh.
He's used to this. All right. After a threat from a tiger forces him to flee from a pack of wolves and into the jungle, a man cub embarks on a self-discovery with the help of a panther and a free-spirited bear as 2 young Mormons are sent on a mission to convince the people of a small village in Uganda to become part of their church.
I can't think of the first movie.
Yeah, let me.
I know it, but I
can give you a hint on the first movie.
Jungle Book is the first movie.
Yeah. Jerry's
What's
got
the
it.
Movie?
He
oh,
made.
No, wait, no, wait. Can I get the second part again? Can I hear the second part?
Can we, yeah, we can read it to you again.
Just the, yeah.
All right, just the second part. CeCe, I might try and help you out on this one to keep the game going. The second part is, well, it's in the middle of a sentence, but, and a free-spirited bear as 2 young Mormons are sent on a mission to convince the people of a small village in Uganda to become part of their church. It's a big Broadway play.
I was going to say, but it seems too obvious. Jungle Book of Mormon?
Yes, Jerry! Jerry!
I was worried.
Book of Mormon was a movie?
Yeah, well, that's why I said the Broadway
thing.
That's
why thing. I didn't think either.
I didn't think it was a movie either. I didn't think it was a movie either. All right, well, Jerry,
this is a blowout.
Whooped your ass.
No.
But hey, you want me to give you the other two just
to
see?
Yeah, let's go.
All right. After being snubbed by the royal family, an evil fairy places a curse on a spindle, which causes the princess to go into a never-ending deep slumber. Unless she is found by her true love, while a young prince is imprisoned in the form of an ugly creature with many magical talking objects and must convince the only girl who has entered his castle to fall in love with him and turn him back into a human. You know what's funny where the commas and stuff are? It's really hard to read this stuff. If it makes sense.
Sleeping Beauty and Shrek?
Sleeping Beauty and the Beast?
Yes! Yes, Sleeping Beauty and the Beast. All right, and here's the last one. 4 women have given up on getting their men to do what they want until they find a how-to book written by Steve Harvey. They start using his advice about relationships, and their men start falling in line until a man who works as a handyman in Boston has to return to his hometown to be the guardian of his 16-year-old nephew. Then, as if losing his only sibling and doubts about...
You were set up, CeCe, by the way.
Right.
They set you up. Right. Set you up. You were never going to win this.
Two of these movies that we fucking...
Yeah, as if losing his only sibling and doubts about raising a teenager weren't enough, his return to the past reopens an unspeakable tragedy.
Think Like a Man.
Chester by the Sea.
Yes. Hey, the tag team to end it there.
They set you up.
The tag team to end it. I love it.
I think that one could stick around.
That's a. What do you think? You like that
I
game?
I think it could stick
that
around.
That's a good game.
But let me tell you, if someone walks in here without a vast knowledge of
then
we're
going to be just sitting here looking stupid. Yeah,
yeah. Either that or we're just going to expose the hell out of them. All right. We have a couple. Let you get out of here. We have a couple like audience questions to run by, if that's all right. Okay. Jason asks, and by the way, we'll tell you this as you're listening, rate and review on iTunes and leave questions there because we'll take some of them for our guests. And we have cool guests like Jerry coming up. Okay. Jason asks, favorite non-televised Entourage moment?
Favorite non-televised Entourage moment. Wow. We went to... I mean, there's a lot. So I'm literally picking one that just jumped out to me. But there's been so many, like, unbelievably lucky, cool things that have happened to us. But we were at a fight in Vegas. I forget which fight. And we ended up going to eat in the steakhouse afterwards. And I don't know if it was all of us. It was definitely Kevin Connolly, Adrian. I don't know if Dylan and Piven were there. And someone came over to us and they're like, oh, would you like to meet Muhammad Ali?
Whoa.
And I was like, what? That's not a question. That's a statement. And he was in like the back area kind of having a private dinner. And we went in there and we kind of, there was like, you know, we were at like a 10-person table. So we didn't all go in, but we kind of stacked. So at first me and at the Connolly and we kind of walk in there and we said hello to him. And he looked a little disinterested, to be honest. And then we had Donnie Ramirez was working on the show that year, and some of the girls came in, and his face just lit up. Like, he literally almost, like, moved us out of the way. I think he might have called me ugly. I think he might have said, you ugly, and just smiled at the – and there's a picture, and you could actually see his face is lit up. Just know, he only lit up when the women walked into the room. When we first went in there, it was like, oh, my, he doesn't want to meet us.
So he was still the same dude then.
That's great.
That's so amazing.
That was pretty awesome.
You guys met Ali in 2009, right? Didn't you on the warning track? I just remember. I feel like I remember the whole team.
No, I mean, I met him at the All-Star game 1 year, and then I met him at Louisville with Lil C. Lil C got a chance to take a picture with him, but I don't remember him at the stadium. Maybe.
I thought he maybe came once, but either way, that's cool. You got to meet. All right. Now, I don't know. You tell me. This could be a sensitive subject. I'm totally ignorant to it. Vladimir Larik asks, what happened to the Arturo Gatti movie?
Oh, not a sensitive subject. It's still something that I believe in. I think, I know for a fact, I think I've gotten a little too old now to play Arturo Gatti. This, you know, the project kind of came to me, I think this was like 5 years ago, and kind of got caught up in the minutia of the process of getting a script made, you know? You get the script written, you hire a writer, and then money stuff starts to come into it, and also, Pat Lynch, who was Arturo Gatti's manager, and they were like brothers forever, you know? It's such, you know, Arturo was so special to him. To me, I treated this story, obviously, very sensitive to Pat's wishes and thoughts, and some of the people we were talking to write, it just was going a different direction than the vision that Pat and I had, and particularly Pat, and that was the real commentary I was worried about. And it just didn't come together. And then 19 boxing movies get made in the last 5 years as well. Mm-hmm. It's still something I think about almost every day. I do really believe that I'm too old. I mean, I told you off the air, I hurt myself getting out of an Uber last week. Strained my
calf. This is true, though. This is a true story.
It's true. True story. So, but I actually, I did myself wrote the opening to it. I see the opening so clearly because Gatti had two separate careers. Obviously, his younger career where he was electric, and then when he got beat by De La Hoya, and right before the Mickey Ward stuff, he found Buddy McGirt and went through this whole transition, and the Mickey Ward fights happened, and then he ended up fighting Mayweather in his own backyard. So he had a second chapter to his career that was almost as good, if not better, than the first. And
could be a great movie.
I think about it.
Me and Cece are locked in, man.
I think about it every day.
But you're right. It's been a bunch of boxing movies that have been made.
Right.
There's been a ton since then, and they've been good.
They've been good. I mean,
they have been good. You know, I rewatched the other day Raging Bull because Rappaport's book, he has a whole chapter on it and stuff, so it like motivated me to go back and watch it again.
Sure.
It's so good, man.
It's unbelievable.
It's so good. All right, this one comes from Nolan. He says, this is kind of funny. It says, how bad was Meta Ian actually?
I think it was pretty bad. And it is funny, too, because just the way things go, you know, we did, like, the fake Aquaman movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And now there's a real Aquaman movie. We did the fake Meta Ian movie, and
now
there's Narcos, and they've talked about Pablo Escobar movies. I think Meta Ian was pretty bad. And I don't know if Doug Ellen, at the time when he set out to do that whole storyline, if he thought it was going to be that way. It's just something that maybe happened, or maybe he planned it out. But I think Medellin was pretty bad.
By the way,
it was a bomb.
I think you should have gotten some stake in Aveon, the tequila company, man.
Sure.
Nothing blew up that company more than you on the show, man.
You know, maybe one day we'll go have a bite and we'll talk about that.
That sounds good. Jerry, thank you for doing this with us, man.
Of course.
Anytime. Honestly, I've been respecting your guys' work for a long time, so this is really cool for me to be here. So anytime.
Thank you, bro.
PlayersTribune.com